Welcome to the Torbay Hospitality Podcast. I'm your host, Lynn, and I'm joined by our producer and co-host, Callan. The purpose of this weekly podcast is to promote everything going on in hospitality in Torbay. We're talking about restaurants, pubs, bars, attractions, festivals, events, plus a jobs listing and our live music calendar. If you like what you hear, please share a 5-star review, tell your friends, and give us a follow on all social media. It's time for the show. Let's get started. Hey, welcome back to the Torbay Hospitality Podcast. This week we have shout outs to Andrew from the RAF, Alexis, Sally, Chris, and Alan, Romina, Bruno, Chloe, and Joe. Thank you so much for your positive feedback and for supporting the podcast. This week's format is a little bit different. We're focusing a bit on accommodation, and we have an exclusive interview with a member of the Red Arrows. So we'd love to congratulate, first off, the winners of the TripAdvisor's Traveler's Choice Award 2023. Congrats to the 25, the Headland Hotel, the Crowndale Hotel, the Chesterfield, all in Torquay, St. Wenard's, and the Queen's Hotel in Paignton. Congratulations. Today we have an accommodation roundtable where we pose challenging questions about trends affecting the hospitality sector. Callum is taking it from here. Let's have a listen.
Thank you very much, Lynn. We're joined here today with Jason Parry, who is a multi-site manager at the Fragrance Group. Can you just tell us which two hotels that is down in Paignton?
Yes, so it's the Mercure Hotel in Paignton and next door the Ibis Styles.
Okay, perfect. And David Black, who is the chairman of the Bridge Group and owner of the Headland View down in Babbican. All right. Thank you guys very much for joining us here today.
Thank you.
Okay. Good.
And how are we today?
We're good.
Yeah, really good. Thanks. Good. Yeah.
Enjoying the weather.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Well, trying to.
Nice bit of Torbay sunshine.
We managed to go out of the hotels.
Yeah.
What we're going to do today is we're going to speak over some points of advice. We're going to go over last minute bookings, weather, and OTAs. So we'll start with last minute bookings, and I'll pose this question first to you, Jason.
Yep.
What's been the impact that you've seen over the last 10, 15 years with last minute bookings? How's that changed the industry, and how can hoteliers deal with that change?
Okay. We definitely have seen an increase in last minute bookings, and probably more so since the pandemic. To the point now that we are picking up significant business in the week for the week, in the day for the day. And I know it's another question later to come on to regarding weather, but it is very much dependent upon that these days. You used to know 3 months out, 4 months out, what your month was going to look like. That's sure. Not the case anymore. It's an opening to new hotels. I need a crystal ball.
So how do you deal with that?
It's very much a case of obviously you have a bit of experience, but yeah, you're looking at it, you're viewing what the market's doing, your local competition, national competition, and just getting a feel for general confidence. Big one, communication. So talk to people, find out how things are. Sure. You know, we're very much open book, so you know we're happy to share where we sit with things and what's going on. So equally, you know, if that's reciprocal, that's great and gives us an opportunity.
Sure. I'll pass this over to you, David. For yourself, how have you executed your planning? Like, if you don't know when your guests are going to come in, you know, you've got on the books an empty hotel in 2 weeks, but then you don't know maybe in 2 weeks you're going to be full. Mm-hmm. How do you plan for that?
It's a little bit different for a smaller bed and breakfast against what Jason's dealing with. I mean, you know, so I've had recently, and it's the first time in my 7 years I've been here to do this, is that if a week out I'm finding I don't have any rooms or anything booked or something's cancelled, there's been a lot of cancellations this year, which has been unusual, I've then closed out. I've actually said, fine, I'm going to do something else those 2 days. I'm going to do some maintenance work, etc., rather than just take one or two rooms, which isn't really cost effective. So I've had to make that business decision so that I'm trying to encourage the guests all to go to certain nights where you're going to be fuller in that way, you're reducing your costs. You're watching your costs, which you've never had to really do before. This year, in cost of the living crisis, you've had to do that. As I say, it's a little bit different for Jason because he's got a lot of rooms and he's got a lot of overhead to worry about. When you're on your own and you're running a place by yourself, it's a little bit different. So you can react with that sort of last minute. And I'm not going to just leave it open and wait to, and see if somebody books for tomorrow.
Okay.
I'm having to plan a little bit better than that and reacting better so that I'm encouraging, as I say, people into those busier nights.
And how long have you had that? Had that change? So has it always been that way since you've had the Headland?
No, that's this year. This is the first year that that's ever happened. So okay. To your point, and you're asking, you're really having to adapt to what the market's doing and what's happening within the local economy and what's happening nationally.
Sure.
Because you've got to react that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I want to ask both of you guys, just jump in, whoever's got the first idea, is there any way to capitalize on these last minute bookings? Is there any way to say, okay, we've got this change in the industry. You know, our customers, our guests, they've become accustomed to being able to book last minute. Is there any strategies that a hotelier can now implement that, you know, really allows them to actually benefit from that?
There are strategies, but it comes down to what you sell your rooms for. A lot of the time and how long you prefer to hold your nerve.
Yeah, that's exactly, okay. That's a great point. I mean, yeah. I think holding a nerve, I know I'm saying that, that's an expression I've been using with on my membership recently, is saying, you know, don't be too quick to drop your rates. You don't want to race to the bottom when it comes to that, because that's sometimes what happens with a lot of people. And if that business is going to come anyway, the only person going to benefit will be that actual guest, because then you're just dropping rates. Mm-hmm. They were going to come regardless. You're not going to encourage any new business by dropping the rates, really. Sure. You're just going to get that business that was coming at a lower rate, which is never good for anyone.
And what you sell at this year is your starting point next year.
Correct.
Yeah.
It's your benchmark.
So you know, you've always got to have that in mind. And
yeah.
It's that constant balancing act. Sometimes you're better off selling less rooms at a higher rate, mm-hmm. because you've got lesser overhead, mm-hmm. than you are selling more rooms at a lower rate.
You don't want to be a busy fool.
Exactly.
Sure.
Exactly that.
Is that not difficult for some of your members, though? Because they, you know, it's not like there's two hotels in Torbay. Are they not afraid that their competition is then going to bring their prices down? Then it is a race to the bottom. I understand. Yeah, but if everyone's racing down, then how do they stick to their nerve?
I've advised, I mean, I can't obviously dictate anything, and I can only give advice and suggestions, and that's what we do. And everyone's circumstances are different.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people have a huge overhead with loans, you know, so you've got to consider that. You know, their interest rates are going up significantly, and they've got that loan payment to pay every month. And some people don't have that at all, and they own their property outright, so they're in a different financial situation. So I understand and appreciate that. But as I say, if you're going to drop your rates, if you take that business so cheaply, it can end up costing you money.
Yeah.
You know, you're basically making nothing and you're working a 12, 14 hour day for nothing. Mm-hmm. I mean, as it is, I mean, a lot of bed and breakfast owners sometimes, you know, can be earning, if they do the arithmetic on it, which I don't always advise to, because it comes out they're making about £1 or £2 an hour, you know, when you look at it that way. And then you've got to weigh that up with your health. Will you make it through to the end of the season? Are you going to collapse? And, you know, so you've got to weigh, there's a lot of factors to take into that. So sure. Dropping those rates, you've got to think of the big picture, not just I'm thinking about tomorrow. You've got to think about where we are in September, October. Yeah.
And then with the last minute bookings, the last question I have is, do you guys have any stories on either, you know, from yourselves or that you've heard where a hotelier has had a last minute influx of guests, filled up the place, and either that's been a, you know, great success story, or on the other hand, a bit of a disaster story.
I think disaster is probably a bit extreme. however, yeah, I'll take last weekend for us. We went from a relatively busy weekend to being pretty much full.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
And that obviously has knock-on effects, because you plan your staffing, you plan, mm-hmm. You know, in a bigger property, you've got more people that you use.
Your project's what you're buying.
Exactly. Yeah. So you're spinning a lot more plates in that respect. And that brings challenges. Not only from a business perspective, big tick, the hotel's nearly full, great, we can increase the rates, we can do all these things with it. But actually, we also have to balance looking after our team as well and making sure that they're able to cope with the business and you know, any negatives that happen, how we address those moving forwards.
So yeah. David's saying that sometimes he'll, you know, close down. Would there ever be a...
No, you can't do that.
Absolutely.
You
really can't do that. No. No, so we look at everything.
Yeah.
Probably a different perspective. So we have a central revenue team who will look at bookings.
Sure.
What's come in the previous day, what we will then react. We look at the local market, local data, what people are selling at. We'll also look further out within nationally and pick up on those details and then do things to stimulate. So okay. It's our first year of operation. The focus for us this year is largely occupancy because it's brand new. We've got no historical business to review against. But equally, what we're able to do then is tweak rate.
Sure.
So we're kind of building up ready for what next year will look like on the basis that we can see what reaction things are having now.
Do you find that data is quite a big part of the decision-making process?
Yeah, absolutely. When you say we've got 161 bedrooms in the Mercure, and you need that level of data to be able to make decisions because it's not affecting a smaller number of rooms. It's if I was to have a dozen rooms left of a night or 20 rooms, that's catastrophic, a hotel of our size. You can imagine just the energy bills alone.
So. Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. We're going to go on to the next topic now, which is weather. And obviously, weather's kind of the name of the game here. I mean, you know, if it's, you guys said as you're coming in, it's beautiful now. People are starting to book, but we've got that uncertainty. We don't know what the weather's going to be tomorrow. We have a good guess. We have the Met Office and stuff, but, you know, we just don't know. So how do you deal with that uncertainty of weather?
Well, that's crystal ball stuff, isn't it? There's not really much you can do with that, apart from just react and get ready for
exactly. it. Exactly, and it's also kind of links into the previous question in terms of last-minute bookings. That's what drives the last minute. You'll get an amount on the book beforehand where you know roughly where things are, but then when you get, as soon as the sun comes out, the phone start ringing.
Yeah. I mean, if you look, we had 3 bank holidays in May. The first two didn't really do anything at all. I mean, and I actually even closed the second one, which was the coronation weekend, because I did no business. And I knew quite a few properties had done the same thing. It just didn't make any sense. There was no business at all.
Yeah. It was too many bank holidays.
Exactly. It really was. And it was very close to Easter as well. Easter also affects the May bank holidays. If Easter's in April, it affects May. And if it's in March, it's beneficial to the May bank holidays. So to Jason's point, you've got to analyse all these factors when you're doing your planning. This one we've just gone past, because the weather was so outstanding, and I think because people hadn't been away for those first two, they all said, right, we're going to go away. We know the weather's going to be great. We're not going to be sitting in watching the coronation, which a lot of people didn't go away for that weekend because they wanted to stay at home and watch it. They weren't going to go away and sit in the hotel room watching it. So basically, everywhere was crazy. I mean, and I'm on Babbicombe Downs, as we mentioned. Every restaurant, cafe was absolutely heaving. And next door to me, my neighbours have now opened up a cafe on their front. They have never been that busy in over a year that they have been open there. They ran out of food. They actually had to close on Bank Holiday Monday because they had nothing, no supplies. That's how busy they were.
On the flip side of that, do you experience any last minute cancellations when it's sunny now? So I'm booking my holiday for 2 weeks' time, but then because I'm thinking it's sunny, it's beautiful, I might go to paint and I might go to Torpay.
People do sometimes. People
there will be some, and some of the terms and conditions of the OTAs will allow people to do that up until the day of arrival. which makes it difficult.
Yes,
It's probably not as many as you might think.
Okay.
That will actually do it. People generally, the weather's great or not, they've already made that commitment.
Correct.
And they're probably going to go through with it.
Yeah.
More likely is that if you've got a spell of bad weather, they may leave earlier.
I've had that many times.
If they're 3 or 4 days, they might go after 2.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I've had that before. I mean, you're still, unfortunately, they're still paying for all that time because when they leave, we don't say, oh, it's fine, off you go.
Yeah.
Once they've checked in, if they want to leave 2 or 3, I've had one where they've left 4 nights early and they paid for those 4 nights.
Yeah.
You know, because the weather was so bad.
I mean, it's quite, quite an interesting business because you are offering, you know, you're offering a service of a holiday to your guests. So do you find that with the reviews, if the weather's been bad, then that affects your reviews?
It can. I mean, they've got to be really a certain kind of person to do that when they want to find an excuse. You know?
Yeah.
And if they're looking for the slightest little thing that you've done, they'll focus on that you haven't done properly, that they're not happy with. Because the weather, you could say they're in a bad mood.
Yeah.
So they'll use that. So you're just going to make sure that nothing's wrong.
Sure.
So they don't have an excuse. I mean, that's basically
absolutely. I think the other thing to mention as well is that it depends on business mix. From a ledger perspective, that the weather has a big impact. From a more corporate angle,
it's different.
It's different. As a purchase, as a visit,
it doesn't matter.
It's not doesn't weather matter. Dependent.
So. Yeah, okay, that makes
that's
sense.
True. Your business is very different.
We're very diverse in terms of what we do. So we'll be ledger business, corporate business, group business. You know, so all different types.
Which meetings, makes up meetings, etc.
Yeah. Exactly.
Do we have any success stories on adapting to the weather conditions for our occupancy rates?
Well, it's a tricky one. I mean, I tend to find that if the weather is bad, then I'm suggesting attractions that are indoors, obviously, So you're looking at, you then have to have a list of things that will work for whatever the weather's doing.
Okay, and that's always outside your property. You don't have board game area or something like that.
You do. I mean, you have all the games, etc. But I only take adults, so I mean, okay. I don't have any children, and that's a bigger challenge if you have children. Then trying to amuse them—that's not been a problem.
I think there's quite a lot in the area, both the good weather and bad.
Yeah.
So generally, you'll find people who will still go and enjoy the time, whether it's good or bad. So. Yeah. You're more likely to, one big impact for us, if it's terrible weather, my terrace is not going to be used.
Sure.
It's 130 seats. Yeah. So, it has an impact.
Yeah.
That's true.
On a personal level, what's your favourite things to do when it's raining weather?
don't really get out much. Like,
my wife's told me that I need to be doing, so.
Cinema,
very often. Yeah.
When you're in the hotel business, you really don't have that thing called a life. Really.
it becomes a way of life, not a job.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so you don't actually factor that into the equation, do you?
If you go out and do something, it's very much ad hoc.
Yeah. Okay, well, I mean, on the other side, we are living in a very lovely area. That's going to be a part of why you guys chose to live here. Mm-hmm. So what's your favorite thing to do when it is sunny? don't tell me it's the same answer.
Well, for me, I have a house out in the country, so when I can get out there, then I love just the peace and tranquility away from everything, just so busy. I like to get away just into silence.
Okay.
With the dogs. I have a couple of dogs, so I'll disappear out there and I'll do some gardening and stuff like that.
Oh, sweet. That's nice.
I'm definitely not a gardener. we'll generally quite just go out and just take the dog for a walk and enjoy the local area, scenery, like Cockington, and trying to find different walks and things that are a bit different.
Yeah.
So, I don't know if you find that when you're dealing with people in a sense, or when you're dealing with people all day, you just want to get away from them.
There's probably a little bit of that.
Yeah. Okay, last one on weather. We've got a question about climate change and demand. Do you guys have any expectation of a change in demand in the next decade, two decades from climate change? Or is that just not something you're thinking about now?
Well, I'm also a director in the Chamber of Commerce, so we do a lot of meetings, etc. And I hear a lot about what's going on, especially here in the Bay. For example, within the harbour itself and the Debenhams development, I mean, in 50 years, okay, it's more than a decade, but 50 years' time, it's foreseen that that will be underwater. So anything that's now got to be built has now got to allow for that rise in the sea levels. So it's something, I mean, okay, it's not going to be in my lifetime, but it's something that's going to affect things significantly, and this whole area will change because the sea level will be higher than it is currently. So where we're sitting will actually be not 1 foot up, it could be actually just street level.
Okay. Yeah, and obviously we're a new building, so we've been built to that, so we have everything for us is above ground level.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Although our plant room is below, but we have flood barriers and things internally that we would put in to suit. And obviously part of the investment to the area, there's a huge amount of money for paint and seafront.
Mm-hmm.
So we're obviously set back quite a bit. Mm-hmm. So you think about flood barriers for us, it seems crazy, but in that type of scenario, we're in that, we're future-proofed.
Sure. Mm-hmm. There's a flood barrier being built in Paignton, I believe?
Yeah, so the sea wall will be increased into the size to counteract that.
Thoughts on that?
Is
that
a need to happen?
Yeah,
it's one of those things that'll have to happen. Our building's future-proofed.
Mm-hmm.
We're probably the only ones realistically on the front there, because we're the new ones.
You will be. There'll be nothing.
So the if that it doesn't happen, then the impact will be catastrophic. Obviously, over time.
Yeah.
But I would envisage that the green probably won't be the green anymore.
It'll be a pond.
All will form part of the beach. Yeah. Ultimately, if they didn't do something with the seawall.
Yeah.
So it has to happen.
I mean, it is. I mean, where I'm in Barbican Downs, I mean, we're the highest. I'm on the highest promenade in the country, so it's 200 feet high. So I should be okay.
Yeah.
But Keep just across from me is it where the houses have fallen off the cliff. You know. Yeah. So I mean, that's something that happens up there quite regularly. Mm. So part of not far from me. Okay, it's different rock, thankfully, but those houses are falling down and onto the beach.
Yeah, yeah. It's I've worried, seen that. A little bit terrifying, to be honest.
Yeah. Because
you've had them there for like.
Oh, I have pictures within my property. It shows you the amount of land that's gone. Yeah. I mean, I've shown people and they can't believe the length of when the main house went. I mean, that had a massive garden, a swimming pool at the end, and that has all gone over time. And it's had quite an amount of land that's now in the sea.
Yeah, and they left that house there for ages, didn't they?
Well, that house, when it split, I mean, the woman who bought that, I think it was about 2 weeks after she bought it when it fell down the cliff.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, I mean, she bought it. She bought it at auction and hadn't really done a research on it. And what's that insult to injury? She didn't pay for the removal of the debris, you know? So once you've lost that house. And that was, I think, when by the Tate and Lyle, the sugar people, it was their holiday home years ago. So it was quite a famous house, and it was quite a, you know, significant property. Fell down the cliff. And the two houses next door to it are lying empty because they're going to go next.
Mm.
Okay, so the climate change, we're not really thinking about demand, we're actually thinking about risk analysis.
Well, it's a little bit, probably a little bit from our side, from a corporate perspective, that forms a big part of the buying decision for a lot of corporate customers.
Okay.
So they, we have to have environmental policies and all these sort of things, which climate change is a big part of that.
Sure.
So we are thinking about it, but more from a longer term perspective, not necessarily the day-to-day elements, but we've got different things within.
I'm curious, in your risk analysis, do you have, like, when you say longer term, are we talking about 50 years, 100 years?
I think the 50-year piece is the sea level, which is the big risk.
Sure.
And that's the measures that are put in place, but that's put in place largely through building control, so part of the design project has to be to take these factors into.
Right, thanks for that. We'll go now into OTAs. Online travel agency.
Yeah.
The real smiling and
fun stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so I mean, the first question is a positive one. Let's start with the positive one.
Okay.
How are we using OTAs, online travel agents, to our advantage? How is that change in, you know, how you get your guests, how has that benefited the industry?
So obviously we're coming from a slightly different angle. With a zero base, with zero history. So we utilize OTAs fully. We look at the transient business and we'll know that an awful lot of that will come to us through OTAs, certainly for the first year or two. Then it's for us to convert them to direct bookers. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sure if there's any OTAs listening, they won't want to hear that. But that's the reality and that's what you do. So it's very much about use them. We know what they're there for.
Yeah.
Work with what works for you. Mm-hmm. And then when you can, you know, you'd switch off an OTA last minute for, unless you're desperate, in a smaller property, a bigger one like ours, we need that element for now.
Sure. How can hoteliers make that transfer? How can they encourage guests after they've come that first time with an OTA to then the next time they book, go direct?
Talk to your guests.
Yeah, market to them. Yeah. Write to them. Mail shots to them.
When they arrive, get their own email address, because if it comes through booking.com, it comes with their own unique booking.com email address. So, but you can update the system. Yeah, I'm sure pretty much all PMS systems, you can update the guest details. Mm-hmm. And it's only through conversation.
So you're saying literally to over the breakfast table, in the lounge.
Check in, check out, if you generally chat to people.
I think it's awareness and education. I think it's trying to educate people that they can get a lower rate if they book direct. Because, I mean, we're paying 15, 20% commission to these OTAs. So, I mean, and no one can take that hit. I mean, I think most of the big companies do the same thing now, where you have a higher rate for the OTAs. You're not putting you don't pass the whole commission on to the guest, but sometimes you put quite a significant part of it. So it's in the guest's interest. And guests have said to me, is it better for me to and it's uncomfortable to say, well, actually, if you booked direct, you'd have been paying £20 less per night if you'd done that, for example. Mm. That's not a conversation you want to have, but you just tell them that, yes, it'd be much better off if they do that. Mm.
Is there something where you're kind of taking a feel of the guest? If they're going to come again, then you're mentioning this. And if they're not...
You just need to mention it to everyone, I think, to be honest with you.
Okay.
You just got to get a message across as much as you can.
You put in processes. So on check-in, you take their own email address. Then they're on, assuming they've signed up for the marketing, for us to be able to market mm-hmm. them, then they have the opportunities to go direct.
Sure.
You know, so it's, there's lots of little tricks you can put in there like that that help as you're building your own database to be able to market direct, which would then, I guess, well, the biggest challenge with OTAs is it's so convenient for the mm-hmm. booker because, mm-hmm. you know, you can literally go on. I was checking something yesterday on my mobile phone for booking.com and about half an hour later, I get an alert through on the app to say, have you decided what you're doing with about this? Mm-hmm. And so they're built with prompts. It's a huge company and they're able to come to that. So from a booker perspective, it's just so easy.
Yeah. I mean, that kind of ties into price sensitivity where the guest, it's kind of like the airline industry now where I just go into Skyscanner. I don't care what the airline is. I don't care where the seat is. I just care about the price. I'm just looking for the cheapest price to get me to, you know, Paris or Milan. And the top one comes up at the cheapest price. I'm going to go for that one. So with OTAs, I could imagine it's quite similar for those guests. How do you compete in that space? Or do you disagree with that notion?
That's an interesting question.
Sure. I think because the other thing OTAs will sometimes do is they'll actually sell it cheaper than the rate you put out.
And they'll take part from the commission you're paying.
So they will, so in order to drive that booking to the top, not always, but it's it's one of the tricks in their arsenal, as it were. But it's difficult because yes, there is an element of price sensitivity for sure. But I think, you know, there's a reality from my perspective is that our industry's created that by doing the better deals. You know, we did it the wrong way around. It used to be that if you book early, you got a better rate. Mm-hmm. But then we flipped it to if you book later, you got a better rate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
We've created our own problem ultimately as an industry.
True. Yeah.
You know, but I think it, price sensitivity is important, but equally you can build up a desire for a book. You know, if somewhere's busy, you can see prices increasing. You might take that. Oh, that looks good. Mm-hmm. If you're watching something to see what's going on, particularly in there.
And for yourself, David, I mean, do you find that your guests are looking for the cheapest deal, or are they looking for a smaller B&B? They're looking for that more intimate experience.
It's a bit of both, to be honest with you. I mean, it can be both. They want the more intimate is the sort of thing that I come across because they don't want to be part of like a huge hotel. They just want to be in a small place where there's only them coming around. You know, it depends upon the individual needs of the guest. Some guests don't want that. They don't want to be. They want to be part of a big hotel. They just want to blend in with everyone else.
Sure.
So it just depends upon the guest.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. We kind of touched on it already, but let's just lay out what are the benefits of, I mean, obviously we've got the price, the amount of money that's coming into your pocket as the hotelier, but what's the other benefits of the guests going directly to your website?
More information, they get better, because sometimes they'll come in and there's a mistake, there's something that's not been correct on the OTA, but if they come to you direct, they get all the information they need. And if you're working with them directly, it avoids any confusion, any misunderstandings. My big issue I have regularly is, I used to offer parking, I had to do away with parking, but it still says I have free parking because it's free on-street parking, mm-hmm. not an actual car park. So people turn up with this image that you have a car park, but you actually, because the OTA has said you have free parking, it's not specific enough to say exactly what kind of free parking it is.
Sure.
And similar for us, it'll say parking, but I have limited parking.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So,
but if you come to you direct, you can explain all that.
Explain exactly.
And then there's no people turning up. And I always say if a guest is a problem when they arrive, they'll have a problem until they leave. And that can be a problem when they arrive, mm-hmm. is that there's no parking. So they're, you know, it then sets the tone.
Yeah,
for their stay sometimes.
Mm-hmm. So would you agree that it's almost like if they book directly with you, especially over the phone, you've started the customer experience journey?
Definitely.
Yeah. And the OTA's become part of that. We've focused a lot on booking.com being probably much the biggest one, but that is also part of your booking journey. So we work quite hard to make sure that the information that's there is as accurate as we can get it from our end, and utilizing, you know, the guest review functions, the people just want convenience these days. So
that's true.
It's how you have to manage that.
Yeah,
yeah.
Okay. But in the OTA is, especially booking.com, will sometimes change things without telling you.
They will indeed. Yes,
and that can be a problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because and that's the beauty of within the Bridge Group. the members will pick up on that quite quickly and share that information and say, are you aware that booking.com have now changed this policy and done such and such? Go into yours and make sure that they haven't changed yours without your knowledge. And that's something that happens. Yeah. And I'm sure from a corporate standpoint, you have people doing that
absolutely.
All the time,
yeah.
Thankfully. But you've got to keep on top of that, because otherwise it will create a lot of problems. Mm-hmm.
And what do we think the future of OTAs looks like?
Oof. Oh, that's an interesting one.
I think they're probably there to stay.
Yeah.
They're very much dictated by the booker, mm-hmm. not the accommodation provider.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
And because of the amount of flexibility they offer, they're very, late checkouts, early mm-hmm. check-ins, last minute cancellations, all that sort of stuff. That's all in the favour of the booker. Mm-hmm. It's not always feasible to do that as a business directly, because it has a knock-on effect. If you're offering a late checkout, that means the next mm-hmm. guest coming in can't check mm-hmm. in. Mm-hmm. So you have to balance that. Mm-hmm. Whereas with the using the OTAs for that, you can limit the amount. You can switch it on mm-hmm. off, and you can mm-hmm. yeah, you can manage it accordingly. But I think it's a bit like review sites. They're here to stay, mm-hmm. and it's how we embrace them.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Any thoughts from yourself?
No, I just agree with what Jason just said. That's fine. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. I've got one last question for you guys. When's the end of the season?
It can be 30 September, it can be October, basically.
Yeah.
Okay.
It varies, and obviously the peak would be during the summer holidays, but you know, we'd love to push it beyond to the end of the October half term and beyond, because there's a lot to do in Torbay, and I think mm-hmm. we also need people to be aware of that and to chat about it. So the more business we bring in, the more things will stay open and trade all year round, and yeah, we can then work towards making it a year-round destination.
I don't know if you guys have ever heard of Wim Hof, but I'm all for bringing guests down for the winter months.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do some ice baths or whatever.
I don't intend to do it myself. It's a great route to market.
All right, guys, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Cheers, guys.
Thanks for that, Callum. And thanks so much to both of our guests, David and Jason. So, you know, on Saturday, the 3rd and 4th of June is the English Riviera Air Show. On Saturday, all the action kicks off with the parachute display team, the Jet Pits Strike Masters, Black Cats, and the Battle of Britain Memorial Flyover. And that's got the Hurricane, Spitfire, and the Lancaster Bomber. At 17:10, they've got the Seafire, and also capping off with the big draw that is the Red Arrows. That's around 5:00. On Sunday, things get started just a half hour earlier at 1:00 PM. It's the Tigers and then the Battle of Britain Memorial Flight. At 3:00 come the Jet Pits and the Black Cats and the Wasps and the Ravens and the Fairies and so on. And that is capped off once again with the Red Arrows. We are so lucky to have an exclusive interview with local hero, Sergeant Will Runciman of the Red Arrows team. Let's have a listen. Right, and here we are with Sergeant Will Runciman from the RAF Aerobatic Team, better known as the Red Arrows. Welcome, Will.
Hi, guys. How are you doing?
Fantastic. The weather is great out here, and we're delighted to welcome you here. Did you say off camera or off mic that you were in Greece?
Yeah, we are. We're currently just down the coast from Eritrea, where we're training.
You're undertaking training?
Yeah, so this is a part of the season where we all train and train and train. And the aim is to achieve PDA, which is Public Display Authority. And that's where our POC1 group will check that the team is safe to fly. He'll grant us PDA, and then we start the season.
That's fantastic. So I understand that you're a bit of a local boy, and you made it all the way to the Red Arrows. And so what part of the Torbay are you from?
So I'm from Paignton. I grew up on the harbour. So it's right in that section of the harbour. I went to Curtis Street Primary School.
Okay.
And then I went on to Paignton Community College.
Oh, that's amazing. I've never heard of Paignton Community College, but I've only been in the area for 6 years. Is that now South Devon College, or is it something else now?
I think it's a sports academy now, I think it transferred over a few years ago.
Oh, that's so cool. Growing up on the harbour must have been amazing. When's the last time you were back?
So I try to get home a few times a year.
Okay.
We family based in Lincoln, so it's quite a bit of a drive for us to go back. But I've still got family and friends there, so yeah, as much as we can, really.
All right, that's super. Yeah, there's a lot of really nice hospitality businesses that have kind of sprung up around there. So I'm sure that you're going to get a chance to go out and see some friends and family when you're down here. What's your favorite childhood memories of kind of Devon? What do you enjoy?
Definitely the harbour. We've got Ferry Cove just next to it. That's one of my favourite beaches. My dad was a lobsterman as well, so we always used to go out on the boat out into the bay. Yeah, definitely. Also, the steam railway down to Dartmouth. It's brilliant.
Oh, awesome. So you started out, you know, like local boy, done good. And so what inspired you to pursue a career with the Red Arrows? Was it like the technical part? Was it the excitement? Or did it just kind of happen? How was it?
So the job itself is what's called a posting. So you apply to join the team. Normally, you know, I've done other jobs around the RAF. Mainly helicopter work. I joined up in 2007, went for a few years of training, and then I've done three tours for the Red Arrows. So this was a sort of pinnacle one. I applied for it in 2019, and then I got the job. So yeah.
That's great. And what's been your experience working with such kind of a high-profile team? I imagine you're very much in demand.
Yeah, so my job itself is survival equipment. So we look after everything that the pilots and the aircrew wear.
Okay.
So wherever the pilots will be, there'll be a survival equipment technician close by to make sure everything's working well and they're flying safe. So yeah, we're at the forefront of safety of the team as well. So it's quite a busy time for us.
Okay. And so what are you looking forward to most in kind of this year's flying display?
So this year we've got the really good airship display. One of my favourites, I think, is the last formation, which is Red One's signature move, the Infinity Break. And especially if you're going to watch it from the English River Air Show, is to make sure you're round about the harbour and at the pier area, looking directly at it, because Red One will spin around Enid, making an infinity shape, which I think is one of my favourite before they break off, and that's the end of the display.
Okay, right. We'll have to look out for that. The Infinity Break, is that what you called it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, I'm looking forward to that. That's great. And so, yeah, are there any kind of surprises planned this year that make it different than previous years, or the Red Arrows don't do surprises?
There's definitely tweaks to it every year. Yeah. They like to change formations and keep it busy. So, yeah, you'll have to see next week.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see. I like that. So when you're back in Tor Bay, where do you like to hang out?
Yeah, so I've got some favourite places I like to go to. So we've got Frank's Cafe over in Preston.
Yep.
That's a really nice place. And then one of my favourites is Molly's, right on the harbour. Yeah, that's one of our favourite hangouts, and I love the fact it's developed over the years from a shellfish little store now to a booming cafe. So yeah, that's one of my favorite places, definitely Molly's down on the harbour.
Okay, yeah. And I don't know if you follow the podcast and you follow us on Instagram, you'd know that Frank's Lifestyle Cafe now has like a little Frank's over at Paynton Pier.
So yeah, they do. So they just I think they've only opened recently, but yeah, yes. Right underneath the pier, a little sub shop, which looks fantastic. I haven't seen it yet, so I want to try and get down there and visit, definitely during the air show.
All right, brilliant. Yeah, I'm sure they're looking forward to that. So shout out to Frank's and Molly's. Lovely. So yeah, speaking of shout outs, is there anybody you'd like to give a shout out to?
You know what, I'll give a shout out to Frankie herself, actually, from Frank's. Done an amazing job with both Frank's and Frank's Wedding right here, and probably Tracy and Nick from Molly's, I'd say. Definitely.
All right, great. Thanks so much for that. Are you ready for the rapid fire round, Will?
Yep, got it.
Okay. So what is the hardest part of your job?
So we're responsible for the majority of the safety equipment that the pilots will wear. So it's in our hands to make sure that they can operate safely and in an emergency survive that situation. So having those responsibilities, make sure the kit works every time, is probably the hardest thing we do, but that's part of the job.
Yeah. And so what is the best part of your job?
Best part of the job, I think, I mean, I love the travel, but for me, it's when we go out to these displays, when we go to the air shows, and you can see the reactions of the public. Mm. I think it makes it all worthwhile, all the hard work, just seeing how much joy the team brings, definitely.
Okay, that's great. And could you describe the English Riviera Air Show in just 5 words?
Individual.
It's up to you.
Let me think. I have 5 words. I was just going to babble on about something. I think it's for the English Riviera Air Show. It's brilliant because you get to view the air shows from all the way around the bay. Mm. You get a unique perspective of it, which no other air show does that. People be over in Torquay or Brixton or Paignton and get a completely unique air show.
I think it's unique is a good one.
Exciting, definitely the location, popular and fun.
Nice, that's brilliant. So the English Riviera Air Show, the 3rd and 4th of June 2023. So is that the Saturday and Sunday?
Yes, Saturday and Sunday.
That's brilliant. And didn't you say it was one of the first in the country every year in the kind of the air show diary? Isn't it one of the first?
Yeah, it's one of the first ones in our display season. So it's a real good test of the pilot skills because it's over water. It's straight into the season. So yeah, everyone really enjoys it.
All right. That's brilliant. Thank you. So that's Sergeant Will Runcinen. From the RAF aerobatic team, better known as the Red Arrows. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you.
Never at all. Thank you.
All right. Cheers. Wasn't that brilliant? Now turning to attractions news. The Paignton Zoo is running a competition, so you can win a family holiday park voucher and it's worth £250. You go to their website to enter. The competition closes on Tuesday, the 13th of June. And looking at this weekend's weather, the outlook is scorchio. It's sunny and hot all weekend with highs of 21. So listen, don't forget to leave a 5-star review and follow us for next week's episode where we take a deep dive into festivals, in particular, the Agatha Christie Festival. Have a great weekend, everyone. Bye.